Blog Talk Radio.
All right, boys and girls, pay strict attention, because we have on the show today the man, the legend, the wonderful human being himself. Some say he is a CIA agent. Some say he's the head of Interpol. I can't judge any of those things. I don't know. I do know that Cocaine Bear, my good friend, tells me that there's no greater man in all the internet when it comes to true crime, what's going on in the gang world today, than the famous, the really good-looking, wonderful human being himself, David Arusso of Gangsters, Inc. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good morning, man. Thanks for the introduction.
Well, my pleasure, sir. So, for those people who may live in Iraq and don't know anything about you, how do you get your start doing stuff on gangsters?
Well, basically, it was just a hobby. I started watching The Sopranos, and pretty much before that, Goodfellas and The Godfather, and I just was interested, and what's the true story behind these fictional stories? So I decided to just buy all the mob books and crime books, and that's how it started. And then I decided, why not share these stories? Because most people back then, I'm talking like 2001, most people they were online. You couldn't really find a lot of these websites about the organized crime like you do now. Now you have like tens of websites for everything. But back then there was just, you had Gangland News and you had AmericanMafia.com and that was it. So I decided to start my own website and share these stories, which I found interesting. And I found like some stories were pretty known from the movies, but the background story wasn't as well known. So I decided to do something with that. And that's how the website started back in 2001. And I've been going strong
Wow.
ever since.
Absolutely. I mean, I love it. I love what the stuff you do. I love what the stuff you talk about. I love the information you get. And I can understand why some people might think you're connected to the ultimate crime family, being the CIA, with information that you seem to have at your fingertips.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, when you're doing it this long and you've been online this long and no one basically knows your face, knows your, whatever. I guess I'm a kind of mysterious guy, so people tend to ask questions, and I never give any answers. So I guess that's where it stems from, that people think I'm CIA or Interpol or whatever. I don't really keep my mind on that. I just focus on the stories and telling the stories the best as I can, trying to keep, the facts straight, which is difficult because, these are all guys that want to stay in the shadows, and they don't really want to share their stories. So, it's difficult, but we try to do the best job we do, and it tends to work out, so...
Yeah, I agree. You do a good job, and I appreciate the information that you give out so freely. It helps me understand what goes on in the United States and somewhat around the world, because organized crime has not went away, has it?
No, it's growing, man. I mean, the war on drugs is pretty much sort of like a promotion for drugs. Prices go up, the purity goes, up. Everything is just going better for them. I mean, they got more money than ever. More power than ever. I mean, Mexico has turned into their private kingdom, if you will. So it's the world over, man. It doesn't stop.
It's the world over.
Now, you can legalize it, but it's already out of the bag, man. You can't stop it at this point, I think. It's just it's too much.
And you can't stop it. You're right. And I can only speak from the American side of things here, right? I have to say that if it wasn't for the fact that in the United States today, there are a lot of people, millions of people, that want to fix. If we controlled our demand for drugs in the United States, the Mexican drug problem would go away tomorrow because they have no market. But because we're a huge market, they're going to do what it takes to service it.
Yeah. It's simple, man. If there's a demand, there's going to be the supply, People want to make money, and it's all it's about, so... But
we'll talk about something that you brought up really when we were chatting online in a couple of minutes. But I mean, too, when you look at South America, Central America, you have a lot of poor countries with no opportunities for people to support their families. If my family's going to starve, or if I could grow marijuana or grow opium and get involved in the cocaine trade, I'm going to do that versus see my kids starve.
Exactly. I mean, that's just simply what it is. I mean, and also if there's no job, people want to work. People want to make money. So if they can make money, if they can't make money you know, doing construction or doing some other job, they'll tend to say, I'm going to do jobs for the local drug dealer, you know. And sometimes it's not even pertaining to drugs. It could be that you do his shopping or you drive his car. And then, you know, gradually you move on to other stuff, obviously, and it might be some drug dealing. But some of these people, they start out doing just odd jobs, and then it goes on from there. So it's very difficult to contain the situation if there's no, you know, like in Italy. Italy has a high rate of, you know, there's a lot of people without jobs. So if there's unemployment, people are going to look for other ways of making money and getting that respect that they get with a normal job, you know. So an illegal job is just as good at that point.
Yep. You do what it takes to support your family, support yourself. There's no doubt about it. And sometimes Italy is a good example of where being involved in crime is somewhat a respectful job in and of itself.
Well, I think just having a job and being able to support your family puts you on a different level. I mean, if it's an illegal job, you know, if there's a lot of legitimate employee, opportunities, then, you know, an illegal job would be, you know, looked down upon. But if there's no jobs whatsoever, people are going to look up to you if you just basically have one at all, even if it's for a drug court. You know, people don't care. As long as you provide for your family, they're going to look up to you because you're the one who gets it done. That's all that matters in the world. You know, I mean, if you can, like you say, if you can feed your children, then what's wrong with that if there's no other opportunity? And a lot of these opportunities arise because governments fail. You know, a lot of these politicians, they're in it for themselves and they're corrupt and they you know, they line their own pockets. And a lot of these citizens that are law-abiding, they look at that and they think, you know, if these guys do it, why shouldn't I? Because I'm starving out here, you know? So,
yeah.
Can't blame them.
No, you can't. I mean, here in Talking Racine, my neighbor across the street likes to fix cars. He fixes brakes. He's a good mechanic. But he does it, fixes a car in the driveway. The citizen will send a police officer and give him a ticket for doing so for hundreds of dollars. To give him his ticket, they have to drive by the crack dealer in the corner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't harass them. They'll go give this kid who's trying to make an honest buck a ticket. What does it tell them? It tells this honest kid, quit being honest. Become a crack dealer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's
wild. The message that you're sending. Yeah.
Now, speaking of Mexican cartels, there's a book that I'd like to bring up and discuss briefly that we both have read called Wolf Boys.
Yeah. Definitely. One of the best books, I think, this year.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it tells quite the story, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, do you want to describe it, or should I?
You please. You just go for it.
Sorry?
Go for it, sir.
All right. Well, it's basically a story about two different guys, both growing up in Laredo, Texas. And one goes up to be a cartel hitman for the Los Zetas cartel, and the other one becomes a cop, a homicide cop. And basically, the book describes both their paths on basically how they look at the war on drugs and how they experience the war on drugs, and pretty much how much, you know, damage is done by the war on drugs and how much people profit of it. On the one hand, you have the illicit economy, the drug lords, the drug runners, and everyone, the hitmen. And on the other hand, you have the people who make money, you know, the guys who defend the drug lords, the lawyers. You have the guys who send them to prison, the judges. You have the cops who make money because they have to enforce the law. You have bail bondsmen. You have prisons. And you have all these people that make money one way or another, if it's illegal or legal. It doesn't really matter because everyone has a stake in this drug war. And I think this book really puts it down in that respect, but also in the respect that, you know, most of us know that there's a lot of violence and dread and sorrow in this war on drugs, but this book really brings it home. It brings it home to the U.S., and it brings it home to when you look at these guys and you look at these people and you see this teenager who grows up to become this vicious hitman, and you see how he grows into that, and it just becomes clear, like, how fucked this entire world is, and I think it does a great job at that. It's a very powerful book, powerful message. I think a lot of these teenagers, kids in America should get this on their book list because it may be gruesome and it may be violent, but that's life nowadays, and especially, you know, drugs is everywhere. So best to get these kids reading this kind of book very early. I mean, that's my opinion. Hope I described it well, but
I think you did. And I think you did a good job describing it. And to me, it was what I took from the book was this: the young man that got involved with the cartel doing hits. Here's a young man, and all of a sudden, he's more money than God.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, in many ways, he is a God. He can take a human life without thinking.
Yeah. And without any problems. There's no cops. There's no nothing. You know, he takes a life,
right.
And if he goes across the Mexican border, in Mexico, the cops actually provide him protection. So they'll shut up the street so he has freedom to move around and no one can reach him. He kills his target, and then he's allowed to drive off while the cops maintain the situation. I mean, it's just
It is crazy. And you described it so true. That's pretty much what goes on. And now I'm going to get my soapbox because you touch a very sensitive subject. Is here we are in the United States, and we were bitch and moan about things we bitch and moan at. But Mexico is now a land of a bloodbath after bloodbath after bloodbath, right? And we can't get a reporter to cover that for the United States. And when the Mexican journalists go out of the way to try to cover it so people at least know what's going on, they're slaughtered.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Murdered.
And so...
Yeah.
And to me, there's no single more braver person, in my opinion, than the Mexican journalists, especially the female journalists, who are risking their lives to bring people the news. And here, what do we have? We got people bitched because the president is mean to a television journalist. Oh, my heart fucking bleeds. You know, do a job. Go and report the facts going on in Mexico today so we understand the hell that that poor country is going through and the fact that it is our responsibility to try to help them get out of it. Hello?
Yeah, and the other thing I think, what I think is dangerous in Mexico as well is that they actually, you know, they offer you money if, as a journalist, you can write positive stories about a certain cartel or dismiss stories about a certain cartel. You get paid for that. But if you don't do what they say, that you get killed or, you know, you get tortured or beat up or whatever. And on the other hand, they actually, certain cartels like Sinaloa cartel might pay you as a journalist to write something negative about the Las Vegas cartel or the Gulf cartel or whatever. And it basically goes on. So basically what you have at that point is a corruption of the media. And the media should always be objective, should always be separate. I mean, in the U.S., right now you have a president who's talking negative about the media. And, you know, that it's way, you know, it's not even anywhere near Mexico, but it's a first step in my opinion. I think he should, you know, he can talk negative about the media and the media should just, you know, let it flow. But there's a danger when he starts, like in Mexico, when they start crossing a line. You shouldn't lock journalists up. I mean, even if they write whatever bullshit they write, you know, you should give them the freedom to do so because you can always sue them and you can always, you know, get them to make an apology and stuff like that. But, it's a dangerous job, man. And it's no one is writing fake bullshit just for the sake of it. People are trying to do their jobs. And in Mexico, doing your job can actually get you killed. I mean, getting killed is actually the best case scenario because I would not want to be tortured. You know, I mean, we've all seen, if you Google anything about Mexican cartels on Google, you get to see the most gruesome pictures that you've ever seen. I mean, you can see heads laying on the asphalt. You can see balls and penis and everything cut off from a person. You see a whole room with body parts everywhere. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they do, and that's just, to be a journalist there and do your job and be able to meet sources and talk to people and go out there in the night. I mean, man, respect to those guys.
Absolutely, as do I. And I'm privileged where I live in San Diego. We have a lot of people from Mexico and Central America, and when I get to know them as neighbor, right? Common talk, right? You do with any neighbor. They tell me most of them have fled from Mexico because they didn't want to get involved in drugs. They thought that they had a choice of either A, come to America and try to find a better life for themselves or families, or stay in Mexico and get involved with the cartel. So they fled. And I can't blame them for that.
No, no. I mean, that's actually most of the immigrants coming to the U.S. are actually fleeing the violence. be it in Guatemala
right.
or in Salvador. I mean, you got MS-13, which is a gang, but it's like it's a huge gang. It's in the U.S. It's everywhere at the moment, and you got all these gangs who are, you know, so violent, and their control over these territories is so, it's an iron grip, and it's amazing to see that if you go up there, either you join them or you pay them or you die. And it's no
yep.
wonder that people, you know, gravitate to the U.S. or basically the
yeah.
U.S. is all the only place they can go, because you have to go to the U.S. or Canada because all the other countries are controlled by these cartels or, you know, it's sad,
right.
man.
Do you follow Insight Crime by chance?
Yeah, great site. Great website.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you watch the Facebook Live programs that they do on Thursday afternoons?
No, haven't done that yet. No, are they good?
Oh, damn good. They had a reporter from Guatemala on, right? He's a reporter from Guatemala, reporting from Guatemala, right? Live on Facebook Live. He's talking about the connections of different people in the military and in the government to drug lords, right?
Yeah.
He's naming them by name and what they've been doing, all that other good stuff. And I'm fascinated by this information because I find it fascinating. I'm a big fan of the history of Central America and Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking, I'm thinking, and I'm commenting, right? And they're responding to me, so you have that, which is always nice. I'm thinking, I'm only seeing my comments, and they're taking the time to comment. I'm looking, there's only 21 people watching it. I'm thinking, my God, here you have a reporter on the scene, right? Talking about
mm-hmm.
what's in Guatemala, how it affects Mexico, how it affects the United States. I said, my God, so few people are watching it. And I felt
yeah.
bad for the man who's probably risking his life to get this information to an audience who could care less. And
yeah.
I found that sad.
But isn't that the problem, though? Because, I mean, if you look at, like, yesterday, you know, there was so much news in the world right now. Like you say, Guatemala, there's a big story about corruption and stuff. The story about, you know, yesterday, the story was all about Trump dissing these two, you know, people from Morning
right.
Joe. That was it. That was
right.
the entire media stuff. I mean, even if you're over in Europe, you see Donald Trump dissing these two reporters, which, I mean, it's you know, it's offensive and it's weird and everything. I agree on that. But there's a lot of news that's not being reported by these same reporters because they want to focus on that. And that's wrong because, you know, there is more important stuff and they should focus
right.
on that. But they're not doing it because the public doesn't care. I mean, people don't
well,
care.
Right.
Still
well, I suspect, sir, that they go in for what they think will get them ratings, right? Which is, you know,
exactly.
back in the day, we had the muckrakers started muckraking. Reporting stuff muckrakers did, like the meat industry in Chicago, what the roads were doing about out in the West in the 1800s, because that would sell newspapers. Here, you know, we then want people to watch advertising on the TV channel, so they're producing content that they think entertains. The problem
exactly.
is that, you're right, they are ignoring real news, and there's a lot of it. And I like to get people going because I say, when you focus on what the media talks to you about Donald Trump, you're not paying attention to other things going on that you need to, right?
Exactly.
Because he's doing it for a reason. He's doing it for a reason. You know, it's because he wants to take your eyes off. He'll take that lightning bolt all day. That's what he did as a developer, right? And then he got
yeah.
his plans done by other people. Same thing. And the media plays into it. But again, sir, I have a lot of respect. There's a lot of real journalists out there. Either people reporting in newspapers, people like you with the blog and stuff, and talking about what's going on. I find you guys doing a good job, and I want to, again, take the opportunity to thank you for what you're doing.
Well, I mean, what I'm doing is just, I think my job, it doesn't compare anywhere to what these guys at Inside Crime are doing or, you know, at these genuine, you know, newspapers and news stations are doing. But I think that what I've noticed is that when I write a story about something that is important, like, you know, how much the mafia in Italy really makes, you know, because a lot of these numbers are being inflated because police need more funds and stuff like that. So I had an article about the mafia and how much money they actually made, which was a lot less than, you know, estimates before. And that piece was not picked up at all. People didn't like to read that. But if you put up a piece about Joey Marino staying in Florida, enjoying the sun, you get thousands of people coming in there every day just checking that shit out. And that's what's wrong. You know, people decide, for the most part, you know, it's all about money. And these reporters, they want to make money. So if you want to make money, you have more a better shot writing about Joey Merlino getting a tan than writing about, you know, stuff that actually matters. So that's always the difficult, you know, decision you have to make. So I try to do, you know, both things a little bit. So I get viewers. You know, it's like George Clooney once said, you know, he makes one big blockbuster movie that has a shit storyline so he can make two movies that are, you know, low budget, but, you know, tell a good story.
Right. It's all about finding the audience. And that's always a thing I think in true crime is, I'll put it this way too, if I may. If we wrote a story about Ted Bundy, people like that, especially women like that story. And I don't understand why women are attracted to Ted Bundy. I'll never understand that idea, right? But you're right. Sir?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah?
I don't understand why women are particularly drawn to Ted Bundy. But we can have the best well-written article linking a crime family to organ harvesting, like was done in New Jersey not that long ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And few people would even take the opportunity to read it. Yet that has more of an impact on people, especially skulls, than Ted Bundy ever will since he's been dead.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. This is one of the many strange crime stories that we have going on. I mean, I did not think that. I mean, we all seen horror movies where somebody has a organ harvest, right, or something else is going to happen like that. But I never thought it would really truly happen. But yet it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just wild. That is just very, very wild. So since we're talking about Southern Europe. What I'm understanding is that the Albanians are starting making some moves into Europe. Is that true?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, a recent report by the National Crime Agency in the UK was talking about how the Albanians were among the primary groups who were getting a dominant position in the UK drug world. I don't know if you're still hearing me.
Yeah.
You're still here? All right.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah, it was very quiet, so I decided, like, let me just check in for you for a minute.
Right, check in, but, I'm just being quiet listening.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Albanians, they had a big reputation, like, a decade ago or something, you know, and people were always focusing on them, and they were never really that big. And now, all of a sudden, there's, you know, tidbits, the last 2 years or something, that in Europe, at least, they're beginning to get a more prominent position in, you know, the United Kingdom and Britain. They're dominating the cocaine trade, especially from London and upward. And what I've noticed is my own research is that in the Netherlands, they have actually established a base as well. So they'll get the drugs from South America, usually Colombia. Colombia remains the primary source of most of the cocaine in the world. And they traffic it to Europe, either via Spain or probably Rotterdam or Antwerp in Belgium. And they ship it to Amsterdam, and from there they go to Britain. So basically that's the route of the drugs. And then they sell the drugs in the United Kingdom or elsewhere in Europe, and then they launder the money in Amsterdam. So what we've noticed is that in Amsterdam, a lot of these Albanians been renting expensive apartments. And I'm talking like a couple of thousand euros per month, which is a lot of money for Amsterdam. And you know, they never rented in their own name, so there's always people in between, bag man, front man, whatever you want to call it. And a couple of years ago, the police in Amsterdam had been doing some raids, and they found, you know, hundreds of kilos of cocaine, heroin, they found guns, a couple of million in euros in cash. So that's what they were doing, we finally found out. So you could say that the Albanians have been really expanding their territory and have been establishing a base that we always assumed that they had, but we were never quite sure because Albania's been having shootouts in the streets in Amsterdam, and they've been getting into trouble with the Italian mafia here because, you know, they're both hot-tempered and they don't take shit from nobody. But, you know, this was really now for this official report from the police in the United Kingdom really brought it home that, you know, for the first time we had evidence that these guys were really gaining ground, as people have been, you know, pretty much, well, I wouldn't say that they have been saying that it was always there, but they were definitely saying that it was going to happen. And now finally we have some proof of that. So that's interesting to see that now finally come to fruition.
Wow. A couple of questions I have on the subject, sir, is, correct me being stupid, right? I don't know a lot, so I'm going to ask some questions.
Yeah.
I thought that having farms was next to impossible to get in Europe. Now, but you're talking about gun battles in the streets. How are they able to get these weapons?
Well, I mean, the Eastern European gangs, they always have their guns because of, you know, just the way that their countries were involved in these wars. You know, Yugoslavia was falling apart, so there was a war going on there. So you had the Serbs. A lot of these Serbian folks, they came into Western Europe, so they settled in Spain and in the Netherlands and Belgium and Germany and in the UK. They settled everywhere. So they have guns and they have ways of getting guns. And, you know, whether you have a, like in Europe, a lot of these countries, we don't allow guns. So our citizens, well, we can actually buy a gun and own a gun and go to a gun range, but it's a very difficult thing to get a gun. And you have to go through strict measures and everything. And it's just that, you know, you can't really carry it with you. You have to, well, there's just too much stuff that I really don't know a lot about, but there's just too much obstacles in the way. But if you want a gun, you can get a gun. And if you're a criminal and you don't have to go through all these channels, it's very easy to get a gun because, you know, you can just do it. You know, you go to your bar, you know a guy who knows a guy, and, you know, if you put down the money, you can get an AK, you can get a handgun, you can get Glocks, you can get anything, you know, automatic weapons. It's no problem. I mean, a lot of these bank robbers in Europe nowadays, they have AK-47s that they fire at the cops when they, you know, make a run for it. So it's becoming a problem, and police are cracking down on it. But criminals and gangsters, they always are able to get guns. It's just, that's the way that the underworld works, you know?
Yeah, I mean, here, the United States is different than Europe, as we have a gun culture here. And we have concealed carry and all that other good stuff. That all being said, that AK-47s in Africa and in Europe are next to nothing to buy. In fact, AK-47s are so low-tech that you can make one, if you wanted to, in a half-ass machine shop. They're going to get the weapons that they need. Yep, they will do that.
But let me ask you one question, though. I mean, you have a gun culture, but how many of the gangsters in America have a permit for their own weapon, you know? I mean, they too
don't
get it.
They don't. I mean, here you go. American story from American himself, right? City of Milwaukee, we have a new problem. We have kids as young as 13 stealing cars. The kid would start stealing a car when they're 13, get caught. The judge won't do anything because he's a juvenile, so they give him another chance. He gets caught with another car, he gets another chance. He'll do that till they get 18, 19, or 20, and by then, perhaps, because they have a car and they're driving at high speeds and avoiding the police, to hit and to kill someone, right? So another kid who's now 21, who's in front of a judge four or five times, is going to get some serious jail time. And here's mom and dad saying, oh, why are you picking on Junior so hard for? You know, the thing, in my opinion, you handle the child when he's a juvenile, you won't have a problem. You tell him it's okay to commit crimes, he's going to commit crimes until you shoot him. You know, the idea is, you know, until the puppy pisses you off, you shoot the puppy. You need to discipline the puppy when they're younger, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big problem in Milwaukee. And our Milwaukee death rate from firearms is up there next to Chicago. You know, in Chicago, we'll have six people murdered overnight. You know, and again, Chicago has the highest gun. I'm sorry, Chicago has some of the toughest gun measures in the law in the world, right? But the criminal doesn't care. You know, the criminal doesn't care. Yeah. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now. I apologize.
No, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, if a gangster wants a gun, he'll get it. You know, it's no problem. I mean, the thing is though that Chicago, they might outlaw guns, but every state around, you know, Illinois and around Chicago, guns are legal, right? So it's
right. And again, it's not I mean, if I have a gun in my home and my home is broken into, they steal my gun, they've committed a crime. Probably several do that, right? It's not the fault of a legal gun owner when a crook breaks and enters and steals a weapon. The problem, in my opinion, is when you have the person who's arrested for a crime, they're not being punished for.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a difficult situation that the public needs to be involved in, which means the public has to pay attention and not just simply watch MTV at night or do their Facebook.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that actually, you know, you're talking about crime and punishment, really. You know, like you commit a certain crime and you do the time. But I think that what's going on right now is that, you know, people get to see that there's a double measure. If you have money for a good lawyer, you get off, you walk. Even if you commit a murder, you know, if you got a good lawyer, he'll just, you know, tell you that the glove don't fit, so you have to acquit. You know, it's very easy to get off, you know?
Yeah.
There's no problem.
Be.
And that's the thing. I think that's what most people right now, why there's so much outrage over crime and people getting off, because, you know, even if a certain street kid, he grows up in the street, his mom and dad are on drugs, you know, what kind of chance does he have, you know? And do we have to, you know, punish him, you know, real hard? I mean, you know, sure, because he committed a serious crime. But the fact is, we should just as hard punish these kids from rich neighborhoods that had every chance and every opportunity and still fucked up. But that doesn't happen, you know, because they get the world.
It is correct. You are correct in all those points. One, they should be punished equally, and they should not get away with it because they might have money to get a lawyer. Also, we need to look at mom and dad because, again, talking from Racine, Wisconsin, in the street I live on, there are parents who will put their children out in the street at 8 o'clock in the morning. The kids not allowed in the house until nightfall if they're lucky, because mom and dad, whoever might be at home, is running a business. Perhaps mom's running it. Maybe mom is doing some hooking. Maybe dad's doing some cocaine sales. Don't know. But the kid's not allowed in the house. So what kind of a chance does he get? But when concerned citizens like myself and others call social welfare agencies and say that Jimmy has a problem, can we help Jimmy, please? We could tell it's none of our business.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the thing, you know, right now, I think, you know, never at any time in history, I think, or in modern history, if you will, I think nowhere has there been more outrage than at this point. People see the corruption. People see that the politicians are not doing anything for them. I mean, that's why Donald Trump was chosen, because even now, I think, even if you would have re-elections right now and you'd have Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, Trump would win again. It doesn't matter.
Easily. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, Trump will ruin everything. He will mess up a lot of shit, and he'll lie to us about a ton of stuff, but at least we know that he's doing it. With Clinton, we know it, but it's never up front. You know, she lies, and she keeps the bankers in place, and she keeps everything going, but, you know, she'll act like she doesn't, you know, and that's what right now I think people chose Trump, because people want that corruptive system that arose to get rid of it, and it's you know, it's not happening, obviously, but that's our hope. And I think when you look at the crime rate, I think what we need is basically that we need, I'd say, just fair punishment. And I think that if you get fair punishment, and I mean, it's the same with if you look at the drug sentences. I think that someone caught with marijuana at the moment should just walk. I mean, weed is never really – I mean, I know in the U.S. it's a gateway drug, because in the U.S. everything is illegal. So someone who sells you weed – might know a guy who sells you meth or cocaine. But in the Netherlands, you know, weed is never a gateway drug, because you can get it at a coffee shop. We call it a coffee shop, but it's a weed shop. And there's no mystery about it. You know, either you like it or you don't, but it's not something to act tough about. So a lot of these kids, they don't see it as a gateway drug, and they don't, you know, it isn't, because, you know, you can use drugs, marijuana, I mean, but it's not like you're going to go on to heroin or cocaine. And I think in the U.S., people are punished for marijuana, and they end up in prison, and they come out, and they're a tough guy. You know, now they can join a gang, they can lead a gang, and they can start doing violent stuff and maybe sell cocaine instead of marijuana, when all they wanted to do was smoke a blunt. And I think in that case, I think especially in the U.S., where you have so many states now legalizing stuff, you should just, you know, let that stuff fly, because, you know, weed is never a danger. It's never been a danger, and it won't ever be a danger. And it will you know, you're messing up a lot of lives when you pull these people off the streets. I mean, white and black, it doesn't matter, because everyone, you know,
absolutely,
mostly black people, obviously, but if you would look at a white campus like Berkeley, which is leftist and white as fuck, and you'd go in there, you'd find so much weed that you could lock up, you know, probably half the school or half the college, I mean, but that's the thing, you
which
know?
Locked them up for other reasons, but yeah, you're correct. What gets me, sir, is I think that we'll see by the end of 2018, I think we'll see the federal government lay off marijuana. I think that they will allow legal cannabis sales and let the state regulate it. Because the federal government, like the states, will absolutely love the taxes they can make.
It's all about the money in the end. You know, it's not about morals. It's all about money. And they can
money,
make a shit ton of tax. But I think Sessions is against it. I think Jeff Sessions
soapbox time. I apologize. You know, Jeff Sessions, he worked as a state government, was against cannabis, as he might be today. But what people forget, and you went past me all because you don't follow American politics, is the House of Representatives passed a law saying the DEA cannot use federal funds to bust people for marijuana in the states where they decided it was legal. So Jeff Sessions, so he wanted to get rid of marijuana, no longer has the power to really do anything in the states where it's been declared to be illegal. And we get Colorado doing probably close to $1 billion worth of sales. California is going to do close to $5 billion sales. Nevada is probably going to have to do more than California.
Mm-hmm.
That money is going to talk. That tax revenue is going to talk. And because crime has only gone down, you know, people in law enforcement are going to take notice. Now, they'll lose some money because they won't be able to get the arrests and convictions and stuff like that, but they'll make up those several forfeitures in other situations. So we're doing something interesting here, right? We're communicating, we're talking, and a subject that we disagree about, and we're doing so civilly, I hope, right?
Like I said, I stand corrected because I didn't have those facts. So, you know,
what I'm saying is that what we do when we communicate to people online, right? Because you do a far better job than I do, because you give people information, you help educate people. You've educated me in so many topics, which I'm very, very thankful for.
Oh, glad to help
out.
Same thing, you know, but I think that's what people do. You know, people listen, and when people stop listening, they don't learn. But if you listen, you learn. And if if you're open to learning, because that's a big thing too. But some people think that they know it all and they know nothing.
Right.
And when you think you know nothing, usually when you learn enough to know it all.
The first thing is listening. And you're absolutely correct. I mean, I've been blessed in my show to have a wide variety of different people on. And from each guest, I've learned something, which makes me want to ask more questions, because I always find out how little I do know. And I like knowing more, because I was the kid in high school that paid attention to the teachers in history and geography, because I found that interesting information. I found it wildly fascinating. And I found that knowledge is power.
Yeah, definitely. Even if you don't have a degree, like a lot of people think that it's all about the degree, but you know, I always say degree doesn't mean shit, because a lot of these people, they were very good at memorizing stuff, but they never really digested the stuff. So you might remember like the text in your book, and you can, you know, answer the questions and stuff, but if you never digested it and really made it your own, then you cannot really process it and explain it to other people, or you know, look at the world through the eyes of someone who really knows this stuff. So I think a degree doesn't necessarily mean shit. I mean, we need a degree, though, because if you don't have degrees, then anyone can just say that he read the book and, you know, he's an expert, but when he really isn't. So we need somewhat of a manner in how we can decide who knows stuff and who doesn't. But, you know, it's all about going to the library or, you know, and getting these books or wherever, you know, you can pick up knowledge at so many places at the moment. I mean, online, your podcast, other podcasts, you know, it's endless possibilities right now.
Absolutely. And do you remember the American TV show called The Wire?
Yeah, best show ever.
Absolutely. Do you remember, I think it was Brother Malone, he is the black Muslim that comes from Philadelphia to Baltimore to solve a couple of problems, right?
Yeah.
And his quote he said about library cards. The quote is he's talking, he's in a hotel room, he's got his magazines, he's reading them, and the driver says, "Why do you read so much?" And Brother Mahone stops reading, looks at the guy, and goes, and I quote, right? I don't mean to be racially insensitive, but this is a quote from the TV show. And the quote is, the most scary thing in the world is the N word with the library card.
Exactly. You know?
And that's one thing I tell the African American males in my neighborhood is you want to read because why do you want to listen to what the white guy tells you? You know, the book that you pick up at the library doesn't know what color you are. It's not going to lie to you. The words won't change. And you get them involved in reading, and you get them to know that what they're told in school may not actually be the truth. You know, that opens up eyes. It gets people involved. It gets people interested.
Yep. Well, I mean, the more you know, I mean, when you read a lot of books, you get to see when someone is telling a story that doesn't fit that narrative, you know, and you might say, either, you know, he's lying, or you can decide, well, this guy is trustworthy, so, I mean, he can't be lying, but why is his story not being told by all these books? And then you can dive into that and, you know, do some research, and maybe the guy was wrong, or maybe he's right, but you can decide on that based on facts and knowledge, and that's important, and never just say...
Absolutely.
And that's really how it works, but, I mean, I think that that's in society at the moment, be it in the U.S., and be it white or black, it doesn't matter, I mean, Europe is the same. I think people in general are just, you know, not really open to learning. People are all focused on their Facebook, on their Instagram, on their Snapchat, and, you know, they grab their phone every second. I mean, how can they read a book when every minute they have to check their Instagram for new, you know, new updates? You know, it's impossible. I mean, you know, I do it myself as well. I have to shut out my phone because otherwise I can't read a book. But that's the society we're in right now, and it's really tearing us apart. So
it is. You know, And I think – I apologize for stepping on here, sir. I think that's by design. I believe that the people in charge, however you want to define people in charge, are aesthetically thrilled that more and more Americans will spend time on Facebook or Instagram than going to public meetings. I mean, because, you know, Jimmy, if I'm at home watching TV and I don't go to the city council meeting where they're going to spend money, my tax money – they spend my tax money freely. If I go there and I bitch about, well, can you do this? You know, I complain. That means they might not be able to get away with it. It might mean that they get caught giving their friend some money they shouldn't be giving their friend, and that we can stop it, right?
Yeah,
it's a thing. But I want to bring up something else before we lose all the time. I really liked our discussion with this. I had to, by the way. I understand that your country has a very unique bordello. Has a whorehouse run by the hookers?
Yeah, in Amsterdam, there's a recently opened brothel, which was it's run by the prostitutes. I mean, Amsterdam has been trying to clean up its red light district. The red light district is a place near the canals, which is just windows, red windows. We are, you know, just simple windows, actually, but red lighting. And there's women behind the windows in lingerie. And you can just, you know, look. It's basically window shopping. And you can go in and, you know, fuck one of those prostitutes and come back out. If that's your thing. You know, it's not my thing. And a lot of these women are being forced by pimps from Eastern Europe or from the Netherlands or wherever they're from. So it's not, you know, it's not a nice profession and it's not a nice business. And the government of Amsterdam, the city government, was trying to clean it up. So everyone who... had even the slightest connection to an organized criminal or whatever, was, you know, his license was revoked. And they could not rent a room or a window or whatever. And after a while, the entire red light district was starting to thin out. But people wanted to keep the city alive with that kind of tourist attraction. because it's been with the Netherlands forever, basically, since our 16th century when we ruled the waves and we discovered, when New York was still called New Amsterdam. That's basically when we still had those, you know. So we wanted to keep that, but we did want to have legitimate prostitutes that weren't forced into this business but chose it. And so the government of Amsterdam decided to start up their own brothel with women who would run it, and they would have full control, and they would not be pushed by any pimp. And that's really what, you know, recently they set this up, and it's sort of like a trial because it's the discussion. I mean, prostitution is legal in the Netherlands, but there's such a stigma that a lot of these prostitutes, they can't get a official bank account, not a business bank account, because a lot of these banks, they don't treat prostitution as a true business, even though it's legal. So there's a lot of these double standards, really, where a prostitute, if she would actually really be, you know, just doing it for herself, she could not set up her own business. So it's very difficult because there's a lot of these girls that's being forced, and some of them are doing it for themselves, and still, regardless of their situation, they have a lot of trouble getting by. But the city of Amsterdam decided, let's open up this brothel and see how it goes and see how it works, because, you know, maybe we can keep the pimps out. But I doubt it will happen that way, because I've done research in Amsterdam into this prostitution business, and it's a dirty business, but also, it's, you know, all these girls are psychologically just so, you know, how do you say this?
Damaged.
Most of these, so many girls that do this in a brothel or in behind the windows, especially, you know, these are not normal girls. I mean, no, I don't know any girl who grows up and she's 16 or 17 and she's happy with her life and she says, oh, I really want to be a prostitute, daddy. No girl will say that. You know, no girl wants that as a job. So most of these women that end up in this kind of business, they are damaged and they're usually forced one way or another. Maybe they're free now, but they were once forced to do it by a boyfriend or a pimp. So it's a really difficult business to be in if you're a government or if you're a politician. So they try to set this up to protect these women, but I doubt it will work. But we'll have to wait and see, you know. But basically, the Netherlands is trying to find a way to, you know, give these prostitutes more of a. Well, I mean, there's prostitution is always going to be there, you know. It doesn't matter which city you're going to go to. I mean, in Sweden, they have a situation where they don't, you know, if you're a prostitute, you can't be punished. But if you're a guy who, a John, as they say in the U.S., you can be punished. So basically, they punish the clients, and they don't punish the prostitutes, if I'm correct. I'm not totally certain. It's been a while. But, you know, that every country has its own way, but there's always prostitution. So I don't think you can keep it out, and this is Amsterdam's way of trying to regulate it in a way that it doesn't hurt the women, but it remains to be seen if it works out. But
yeah,
that's how
here,
to do it.
Here we have an interesting situation in Racine. We've always had street prostitution, usually by women addicted to drugs, and you can tell when they do a sting because usually the street prostitutes doing it to get a couple of bucks for the next fix. Look like you would expect, no teeth, bruising, you know, whole nine yards. Look like hell. Well, you can tell the undercover police officer because they're attractive, right? Don't show signs of drug abuse. But here, the biggest one we have is we have a huge human trafficking for sexual purposes thing going on. We have a local establishment that I think has been busted two or three times for prostitution, and it's alleged that the women that they pull out of there are from Eastern Europe, right?
Yeah.
But yet this establishment is left open. Why do I think that the establishment is left open versus being shut down and their owners thrown in jail? Because either they know the right people or pay the right people. I mean, that's how bad it is around here.
And also, let me add this, because when you go to Amsterdam and you look at these women, the women behind the windows, right? This is low down prostitution, if you will. These women, they look like, you know, models. I mean, if you know, you can't take pictures of them, so you can't really Google this. But if you would go to Amsterdam and you go to the right light district, you see women that look like porn stars, you know. you just have have girls with their teeth. They're in nice lingerie. They look, you know, they look nice. If you know, if that's your thing, they look really nice. They look like porn stars and all that. So if they have those kinds of women in Milwaukee, then, you know, I'm certain that there's certain politicians maybe that feel like, well, if the women are this nice, you know, let's keep the business open because, you know, hell, these aren't the girls that we see on the streets without teeth and stuff. These are the high class, you know, prostitutes. And even, you know, they don't even cost that because it's just a dirty business. But you couldn't judge looking at a woman. Yeah.
It can be. It's like drugs. I mean, prostitution exists because there's a demand for that. Same thing with drugs. There's a demand for that. And perhaps more focus needs to be on how, well, I'll tell you what will stop prostitution heartbeat is the move into sexual technology using VR, because how can any woman compete with the perfect woman you can get over your VR device? You know, you can be with Jennifer Lawrence. You can be with whomever you might.
Yeah. This is actually what you're saying right now. I mean, they actually did a test in the Netherlands, and they found out that youngsters are actually, compared to 5 years ago, 5 years ago we didn't really have smartphones yet, or not, you know, not the smartphones that we have with the social media and all those apps and stuff, but we had smartphones, but just not, you know, the ones we have now. But in 5 years, the age of, you know, the first time a youngster has sex has actually gone up with a year and a half, if I'm not mistaken. So to me, that just says a lot of these guys are looking at Instagram models and porn websites, YouPorn, and you name it, and they check that. And either they don't really feel like attracted to their, you know, girlfriends or the girls in their class because, you know, they're held there 16, 17. Or, you know, either that or because of their smartphones, they're just too distracted to get aroused or whatever it is. But, the age of the first time, the sex for the first time has gone up, which is like amazing because it was going down and down because of all the food we're eating nowadays. We get, you know, so horny so fast that a lot of the youngsters were getting, you know, sex for the first time, getting laid for the first time a lot younger, and now it's going up. So, I mean, that to me is what you're saying is, you know, technology is really stopping people from going to actual women, I think. I mean, it's always about the men, in my opinion. I mean, if young boys stop getting horny, I don't think that the women are not necessarily that interested in sex at that age, or, you know, whatever. It depends, but usually it's the men that take the first step. And to see this, I think, you know, you're right. Technology will definitely have a huge impact on sex in society.
This would be the most interesting aside. I, as a hobby, grow mushrooms, and I research mushrooms. So I look what fungus mushrooms will do for us. I don't mean the ones that you consume to get high. I mean, there's mushrooms that eat plastic, you know, as a way to dispose of garbage. There's mushrooms that have all kinds of medical benefits that can cure diseases, which is, I find that stuff fascinating. But the one question I'm asked routinely when I talk to somebody about mushrooms, if there's a woman in the audience, is they bring up the mushroom that supposedly will give a woman orgasm simply by eating it. It has yet to fail. That question will come up. It's just fascinating. Yeah. I mean, people are, I just find that interesting. But we have a guy, I neglected to ask you a very important question, sir, as we run out of time. Where do we find you online?
Oh, well, that's gangstersinc.org. That's it. And you can find me on Facebook if you do facebook.com/gangstersinc. And Twitter, it's Gangsters Inc. Web, I think. Not too certain. But if you type in gangstersinc.org, you'll go straight to my website and you get to see the Twitter and the Facebook pieces. It went fast, man.
It did. I mean, I enjoyed the show. I mean, the reason I like the show, and my thanks for being able to go and do this for an hour, is because a half an hour does not do a guest like you justice. I mean, we went off point a couple of times, which is fine. I thought it added to the show. It's because we can talk about different things and get people interested in different things, which allows me to get a great guest such as yourself, right? It allows people to know more about you and I really am truly honored to have you as a guest. And please, 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 tell Langley, Virginia, I wait their phone call to help them out with the CI type stuff they might need, right?
Yeah,
and
I got your number, so.
You can do that. And so if Interpol needs somebody to do research in the Houses of Prostitution in the Netherlands, they should give me a call. I'll investigate redheads. I'm really, really interested in investigating redheads.
You should check out the banana bar.
Okay.
That's
I will.
That's the thing.
Write that down, boy.
Yeah, check out the Google. Everyone who's listening right now, check out Banana Bar, Amsterdam, Red Light District, and you'll find some interesting stuff. It's all normal stuff. It's suited for work. Well, not exactly, but it's not prostitute, but it's more fun than sexy. It's more fun.
I'll remember that, sir. And one thing, too, I'll mention this in passing, is one thing we need to do roundtable on, is that whole, I'm so bad with pronunciation, foreign name. There's that saccharine organization in Europe that seems to be more corrupt than anything on Earth.
Sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, there's a SAC organization. I don't know how to pronounce it. I think the initials are FIFA.
Yeah, it's sort of like the NFL. It's sort of like NFL, but for soccer. Yeah, it's corrupt to the bone. Yeah.
And the things that have been accused of doing is it's wild. And the money they and I had no idea that I did not understand that soccer is big in Europe and big in South America, that I get. But I did not know the betting on that sport was so big.
Yeah, it's the biggest. I mean, especially in Asia. Asian people love betting on football, but they bet on small teams as well. So there's a lot of corruption and a lot of match fixing going on in Europe with people in Asia betting on the backyard club somewhere in England or in Wales, wherever the fuck. And no one really knows about these competitions. You know, if you're a football fan or a soccer fan, you're not really focusing on those competitions. But the gamblers in Asia are, and they'll bet like a couple of thousand on who has the first yellow card or who has the first throw-in or whatever, all these bullshit things where you can bet on. And they make a lot of money because they have to have the team bought, you know? Yeah, FIFA is like a story altogether because FIFA is that's like the organization that controls the World Cup, which is, you know, you have the Super Bowl in the U.S., and it's the biggest in the U.S., right? But the World Cup, soccer, is the biggest in the world, and you have everyone around the world from the Middle East to Europe to Asia to South America. Everyone is watching that at the same time. So that's like a couple of billion people at that time. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And they control that, and they control all the countries that participate. So there's so much corruption going down that it's mind-boggling. And they still have it. They're still going strong. Putin is going to do Russia. Yeah, Putin's going to do the World Cup in I stopped. I'm more of an MMA guy now, more kickboxing than MMA, UFC. So I stopped watching football, but as a kid, you grow up watching football and soccer and a real big fan. But Putin and Russia are going to organize the World Cup now next. And there's a lot of stuff about stadiums. Sorry?
Our friend, the little lady, told us it's time for me to end the show. But I want to mention a quick podcast, sir, that you might be interested in. It's called New Books in Terrorism and Organized Crime. That's where I first found out about the corruption in the soccer leagues. I want to recommend that to you and everybody else listening on the air. But again, I want to thank you again, sir, for being on the air. It was a lot of fun. I learned so much from you. I look forward to reading your blog. I look forward to your tweets and line and all the other good stuff. And I wish you, sir, only the very, very best of success. And may every wish you have, especially for me to run the Redheads, come true.
Thanks for having me, Don. It was a pleasure to be here.
All right, thanks a lot. All right, goodbye, sir.
Goodbye.
A great guy, great guest. I'm so thankful he came on there. I'm thankful for everybody who listens, all 9 yards. I only got a couple seconds left to say anything, but I just wanted to say those things. I think it's really nice I have people listen to the show at all. I appreciate what he's done. He took the time to come in from overseas to call in. God only knows what time it is over there, but he did that. I'm thankful to him. I'm thankful to the people listening. I'm thankful for you guys, one and all. Talk to you later. I have a second left. Bye-bye.